And welcome back to The Edge Show, episode 29.
Wait, it's been that long, man.
It's been a while. A year now? We've had you on the team almost half that time now.
Six months. I'm getting there in age.
And we just got back from a hiatus, as you maybe tell.
Amsterdam.
We went to Amsterdam, home of the Triple X.
You got it.
What does that stand for?
Well, don't put me in the spot, but it is not what you think what it means to do with it. It actually has to do with integrity, compassion, and something else.
Excellence.
That the Queen of the Netherlands awarded to the city crest during Nazi occupation of 1941.
There you go. The more you know.
You got it. They probably completely got all those facts wrong, but let's go with that. But I've got some news.
What's up?
Also happening this week in between Tech Ed, Europe, and the other Tech Eds that just happened recently, is the fact that there is something called the World Partner Conference going on, and they announced today, a little bit later since this isn't live, that the release dates for Windows Server are going to be RTM'd in the first week of August, and then general availability to the retail channel and the regular channels through partners sometime in early September. And that's a pretty big thing as far as the dates now being confirmed for the server. I'm very excited. Can't wait to get my hands on those bits, but like you, I have to wait until general availability for the rest of the world.
Just about a month. Not too bad now.
Yeah, I know, but still, I'd like to have them now. I want them now. It's so good.
And where exactly is Windows Client? Is that staying on the same schedule as well?
Windows Client is RTMing at the same time. General availability, I believe, at the same time. But I would suggest check out the Windows blog and also the Windows Server blog to find out the exact dates, what they're saying. They have not mentioned the exact release dates, only RTM dates, release to manufacturing.
Coming out really soon, though.
Yes.
So that's the big news. So as we're talking about Windows Server still, we did have a new release, an update for the System Center Operations Manager Management Pack. And so this is the one on the current version of System Center that supports Server 2008, 2008 R2, 2003, been fully updated. Additional fixes, additional capabilities of what it monitors. So if you're using Operations Manager to take care of the infrastructure, keep it healthy, keep it up and running, we encourage you to get the latest management pack. And you can find the hot link to that at aka.ms/scom update July.
Nice.
That's SCOM update July. And I'm next as well.
Are,
I got the next news. We got a busy list here.
Yeah.
So as you also probably know, the CTP, or the Consumer Technology Preview, for System Center 2012 has been released for a couple of weeks.
And the biggest part about that is the ability to start to look at and manage Hyper-V that is included in Windows Server 2012.
That's correct. So right. A lot of people have asked, you know, why is there a new service pack coming out for System Center 2012
right
so soon after we've just RTM'd?
But it's been out for a while, so why is that news, dude?
Why is that news? Well, the big news here, we are now offering sample VHDs
for all of the
different System Center components.
Yeah.
So if you want to just go download that whole VHD file, get it deployed for App Controller, Virtual Machine Manager, Operations Manager, a lot of these key components, you just get that VHD. So you don't need to go and go through that full installation.
Okay.
So get it up and running quickly, test it out, get running with that. And the hot link to download that is aka.ms/sc2012CTP VHDs. Kept it easy for you, but don't worry, we write down the full description at the bottom of this page, so scroll down and you'll get that full link.
I thought you said these were short links. These are pretty long.
Shorter.
Links, I guess, eh? Well, also in the news with 2012 is obviously licensing. There's some big licensing announcements that happen. First of all, let me give you the link, aka.ms/server2012editions is a nice link that takes you to the main licensing page. Now, obviously, that's going to be your absolute source for this. I'm going to try my best to really kind of simplify. Some key points that I noticed. Enterprise Edition is going away. And basically, you're going to have a simplified, more streamlined version of licensing, similar to what you guys are doing with System Center 2012, where you basically got Data Center Edition, and then you've got Standard Edition that you can now license. You've got a neat thing is you no longer need to have the Enterprise Edition to be able to do things like high availability and clustering.
That's now a Standard Edition, right?
So that's very cool. Some immediate changes that come to mind are things like licensing for virtual instances that you can now run in your systems. Data center, you'd license them on a per processor, and you do one for every two procs, I do believe. So basically, you buy two data center, the price is increased, but you get two socket licenses with a single edition of data center. So if you've got a four-way processor server, you get two data center licenses, you got yourself covered, and it all works out in the wash for where it should be. And then you get unlimited virtualization rights as you had before. Enterprise no longer exists. Now you have standard. Standard now comes on a per processor basis as well, and you get two instances you can now virtualize. So if you had a four-way server, let's say, you need to buy two copies of standard to cover your licenses for what you need to have for virtualization. If you have a single processor system, you can virtualize two instances of Windows Server 2012 on that particular box. And there's also two additional editions that we also announced. One that's called Foundation Server, which has a 15-user limit, and one that's called Windows Server Essentials 2012, which is kind of a hybrid version of what you would expect to see with the small business environment up to 25 users. But it's more of a cloud-optimized version where you would have your online services taking care of your email and taking care of your SharePoint type stuff for integration. Anyway, the good thing is at that link I gave you, which is aka.ms/server2012editions, there is a fantastic button at the very bottom left-hand corner that says Resource Guide, which is about 4-page document that discusses all the changes with licenses, all the example scenarios, the virtualization rights, and all that all works, all available. You can go and download that today, right now. Plus also many more links to many more different things that are there too. Lots of changes on the server world. Simplification, which is good.
Well, you talk about guides. I actually want to talk about some of the new System Center guides that we've just released.
Okay.
We've actually published a series of blog posts that aggregate all of the resources for all the different System Center 2012 components. So you could go and find the root of this at aka.ms/sc2012studyguides. And from that, we broken it down into several different sections of study guides with the System Center overview, Advisor and App Controller, Configuration Manager, DPM with Endpoint, Operations Manager, Service Manager and Orchestrator, and finally, Virtual Machine Manager, which also includes a little bit of the Unified Installer as well. So if you go to this site, aka.ms/sc2012studyguides, you'll see links to all the additional blog posts that give you this comprehensive collection of KB articles, virtual labs, VHDs, evaluations, downloads, Microsoft Virtual Academy courses, anything that you really want to ramp up on a specific System Center component, great place to get started.
Now, I did a little piece a little while ago on the infrastructure and planning and design website for architecting systems and solutions based on Server 2008 R2. And that team actually just came out with a beta guide. Do you say beta or beta?
Beta. I think in the UK they say,
you say beta.
Beta,
but we say
I'm
beta.
I'm now American.
You got it.
I can now say beta.
Okay, you can say beta. I always say beta. I don't know what it is. But they have one specifically for System Center Virtual Machine Manager. It's now available for 2012. It's in a beta state, and you can go off and download that. The amazing reason why I'm telling you this is because they're looking for feedback on how to make it better, what they should include, is it comprehensive enough, and they have a feedback alias you can go off and contact as well for some more details on that. That particular short link is aka.ms/vmmipd beta.
Thanks. Well, final topic in the news, around virtualization as well, is one of the new solutions accelerators has just come up with their beta release. This is the Virtual Machine Servicing Tool, or VMST. And what this does, it gets around one of the biggest patching problems that enterprise administrators have, and that's for getting their offline virtual machines and VHD files that are stored in the library. You know, as you go through your patching cycle, you scan all of your active servers, whether they're virtualized or physical, you check whether they have compliant patches installed. Mm-hmm. But what about those that are stored in your library, or they're offline, or they're just VHD files? Well, what VMST can do is it works with Configuration Manager and Windows Server Update Services, and it can go and actually inject a patch into an offline VHD, or if you have a virtual machine that's offline or in the library, deploy it to a host, start the VM, apply the patch, take it offline, put it back in the library. So this ensures that even the VMs that you're not using or that you're saving as templates, those continue to be compliant. So when you go push them in production, you're already secured. And if you want to go and try that, try the beta download. That's aka.ms/vmstbeta. for Virtual Machine Servicing Tool Beta.
Very cool. So who do you got lined up for the guest coming up?
Well, I have Stephen Barron, who's going to be our guest, and we're staying on the same topic. We're going to be talking about virtualization, Hyper-V, and we're going to be talking a little bit about templates, but kind of extending the model of templates from what we had in traditional System Center, mm-hmm. Virtual Machine 2000, Virtual Machine Manager 2008R2. Talk about this kind of new model we have around virtualization, templates. We're really extending the scope of having a single VM be a service to having multiple virtual machines coupled, tied together, virtual networks, VHDs, and being able to deploy that entire unit as a single package, known as a service or a service template.
That's cool.
So
man,
we're going to have Stephen on very shortly and take a look at service templates and creation in System Center 2012, Service Pack 1.
Sounds very cool. I can't wait to see that and see you inside of the break.
And don't forget, any comments, questions you have, please leave them right down at the bottom of the page in the comments section.
You got it.
Or tweet us at TNEdge. And welcome back to The Edge Show. I'm Simon, and I'm joined by my guest, Stephen. And we're going to be talking about one of my favorite new features that came out in System Center 2012, Virtual Machine Manager. And this is all around service templates. But first, Stephen, why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us what you do.
My name's Stephen Barron. I've been with the VMM team for about 3 years now. I did a small stint on the App Controller team, working on RBAC and their multi-cloud management features there. For the most part, though, I'm with VMM, and the main areas that I focus on are new concepts around service templates and our application deployment features that we brought online with System Center 2012 Virtual Machine Manager, RTM.
Great. So back in Virtual Machine Manager 2008R2, we had virtual machines. You go deploy a VM. If you had to set up multiple VMs or, you know, set up a multi-tiered configuration, you'd have to go deploy these multiple VMs, go set up the virtual network manager, reconnect it. And that wasn't the easiest, most optimized solution. But I've heard service templates, they're designed to solve this problem. Can you really give us an overview of what exactly is a service
template?
Absolutely.
Glad you mentioned earlier versions of Virtual Machine Manager. So we looked at VM templates that came with VMM 2008R2 and previous versions. And when we were in our initial planning for VMM 2012, we really took a step back and looked at VM templates to find out what are they good for and what are some of the limitations around those and how do we go about solving that. And we really came up with three big limitations of VM templates as they exist in VMM 2008R2 and even as they exist in Virtual Machine Manager 2012, because we kept them around primarily for backwards compatibility. But the three big problems were, the first one you mentioned, they're good for repeatedly deploying a single machine at a time. And typically when we look at business services, distributed applications that are deployed inside of customers' environments, they typically don't deploy them all on one machine, right? If you think about a typical two or three tier application, you have a front-end presentation tier that may in and of itself have three or four different VMs that are behind a load balancer, probably some middle tier that may be load balanced as well doing business logic, and finally some data tier. Again, very rare that folks go ahead and take their mission-critical distributed application or business application and shove it all on one machine in production. So that was problem number one. Problem number two was really the range of in-guest configuration things that you could do from a VM template perspective. And if you think about a VM template, it's really a combination of three things, right? It's one or more virtual disks. There's a hardware profile, just like Xiaoms, defines the hardware characteristics of the virtual machine. And finally, a guest OS profile that allows you to take care of things during the sysprep phase, or the specialization phase of Windows, like what's the computer name going to be? What's the initial admin password? Is the machine domain joined? If you were brave, you could try to use the GUI run once functionality to execute some script during provisioning, but we found most folks shied away from that. So that was problem number two. Couldn't really do a lot inside the guest. And if you think about an operating system like Windows Server 2008R2, if you deploy a base operating system with no roles and features configured, what could that server possibly be doing in the environment?
There's still a lot of work people need to do to get it up and running, to get it integrated
Absolutely.
And functional.
It yeah. couldn't even be a file server unless you enable the file server role within
right.
the VM. So that was problem number two. Problem number three was when you deployed a VM from a VM template, it was what we called a fire and forget operation. And what I mean by that is when you deployed that VM, it had no relationship, no reference back to the template from which it was provisioned. So if you had a standard template for a small web server and you gave it a gig of memory in the template and deployed 80 instances into the environment, and it turns out that, well, they really all needed 2 gigs of memory. A, there's no way to go and find out easily even which machines were deployed from that template, and B, how do you go about updating them? Really, the only way was find some way to maybe script it or go and touch each machine individually. So, back to VMM 2012, we tried to solve all of those problems and more with service templates. So the first problem being that you can only model a single machine in a VM template, service templates will allow you to still do that, model a single machine if that's what you need, but if it's more likely you're going to need to model multiple machines, a service template will let you do that as well. So you can have what we call tiers of a service. And each tier really is like a VM template. It's a definition for what machines in that tier should look like. So that's problem number one. Problem number two is that in-guest configuration that you need to do. And we solved that with service templates by exposing a whole slew of operations that are available to you when you're provisioning either a service template for a single machine or a service template for multiple tiers, multiple machines. Those features include things like enabling Windows Server 2008 R2 roles and features as part of provisioning.
So you do that from the host when you're configuring the virtual machine?
In the template, you define the roles and features that you want enabled, and we'll go ahead and enable those after Windows specialization is completed. We also enable first-class application deployment for things like Microsoft Web Deploy packages, Server App V packages, and SQL Data Tier applications, so SQL databases. We also introduced an ability that we call generic command execution, and this is for those other types of applications. Maybe you have an MSI you want to install, or maybe you have a standard script that you apply to all of your IIS servers to make sure that IIS is configured just as you want it per your operating environment specifications. So we'll allow you, during provisioning time or even when you're updating a service, to inject payload inside the VM. Could be a collection of MSIs along with a CMD file or some VB script, and execute an arbitrary script inside of that VM. So you could, again, use it to deploy MSI packages or execute some standardization script that you have in your environment. And finally, we also introduced the ability to complete an installation of a sysprep version of SQL. So SQL 2008 R2 introduced this ability to create a sysprep instance of SQL. And when you first provision that machine, you have to log in and complete that installation. Well, we created a new profile type in VMM that allows you to define how you want that SQL Server installation completed, such as, do I want it in Windows mode or mixed mode for authentication purposes? Do I want TCP/IP and or named pipes enabled? Who are my initial SQL admins that I want added into that SQL admin group, and so forth? And when you provision a service and leverage a SQL profile, what you get at the end of the day is a fully provisioned virtual machine that has SQL Server installed, ready to go, and either receive database packages from us or manually by a DBA.
Well, you covered a lot there. So let me try to simplify that. What exactly can go in a service template now? Or maybe you can answer that a different way. What cannot go in a service template?
So when you look at the computer tier of a service template, it really is just a VM template. So pretty much anything that can be silently installed in an unattended fashion, you can inject via service template. You can define hardware config, the guest OS profile, roles and features to be installed, applications to be installed, SQL Server, and all of these are up to you to pick and choose. So maybe you just want to deploy servers with some particular role and feature enabled. Perfect. Have a single-tier service. It looks just like a VM template for the most part. Deploy it, and what you're going to get in addition to guest OS settings and hardware settings are those roles and features enabled. So this is really important when you think about the composability aspect that a service template brings into the environment. What I mean by that is, when we talked to customers during our planning phase of VMM 2012, we found out that they were maintaining lots of sysprepped images for different types of workloads in their environment. So they had a sysprepped image for a BizTalk server, and a sysprepped image for an IIS server, and a sysprepped image for a file server, and a sysprepped image for an application server, and the list goes on and on. Now, number one, that's a lot of images to maintain. Number two, how do you go about updating those images, right? It's really a manual type of process where you have to rehydrate the image, make your changes, re-sysprep it, and then make sure that people are using the right version of that VHD that's available for them. But if you think about what you can do with a service template, you could really maintain, in some cases, a single operating system image for, say, Windows Server 2008 R2. No roles and features enabled, no customizations applied, that really is a generic image. And you can use a service template to define the particular types of workloads you want to deploy. So a service template for an IIS server that has the right roles and features and the right configuration script. A service template for a file server that has the right roles and features, the right configuration script. Service template for a SQL server that has the right roles and features and the right SQL config. And templates, as most folks probably know, are stored only in our database, so they consume very little space. And then we have a whole service lifecycle mechanism around that, where if I forget to put something in the first version of the template, like let's say I deployed web servers, and I didn't have the IIS6 management compatibility feature enabled in my template, but I deployed, like we talked about in that last example, 80 web servers. Well, number one, all those instances have a relationship to the template and the version of the template from which they're currently deployed. So I can go back to that template, make a copy of it, give it a new version, maybe version 2.0, enable that new feature for IIS6 management compatibility, and apply the updated template to one or more running instances. And we'll diff the templates, figure out the changes, and go ahead and apply those changes.
Wow, that's excellent. Now, it seems like with these multiple tiers, though, you have lots of separate VMs. How exactly can we connect them up with the templates? What type of networking capabilities are there within a template?
So the standard networking capabilities are in a VM template. So a VM, which is just a tier for us, right? A VM template defines one or more NICs. and each of those NICs are connected to one or more or one VM network. In the Service Designer, which I'll show you soon when we jump over to into a demo, each of those tiers also has one or more vNICs. And those vNICs are connected to VM networks. So I may have two tiers that are connected to the same VM network, or I may have a tier that has two NICs. One is connected to an internet network, and one is connected to my backup network that's in my environment. And I model those the same way that I do for standard VMs. And really, when we go and look at a service template and you go to the properties of a tier, it is just a VM template underneath the covers with a few additional properties around: can you scale the tier out? What are the maximum instance counts for that tier, minimum counts, and so forth?
Well, one of the big, you know, concepts around private cloud or best practices that we've been teaching is all around standardization, ensuring that you deploy everything consistently the same way every time for best service level agreements. Tell me, how does this template model fit in?
So if you think about an example like providing a development environment to my developers to develop their web applications, and maybe most of their web applications actually have a data tier as well, right? And I don't want my developers necessarily creating virtual machines on their own and installing IIS in a certain way and SQL in a certain way, and then what happens is when I go to deploy that application into QA or staging, I get the famous, works on my machine, doesn't work in QA. Or I have to hand over a 60-page installation document to my IT pro to say, here's how you install the application. And if you miss step 47, subsection B, configuration setting C on page 36, the whole application doesn't work, and I need 30 people in a room to figure out what went wrong. With a service template, I can define not only standard workloads for people to deploy, like I can define a standard IIS template, and I can give people in VMM deploy from template only. Right, so you can't create your own template, you can't create your own arbitrary workload, you can deploy from a standard set of templates that I've given you. So for an IIS server, I can make sure that every time a developer is provisioning a workstation for some project, IIS is being configured the exact same way in all of those environments. Same thing for SQL. When they're doing database development work, I know that that SQL server that they're checking out, if you will, by provisioning one for themselves, is being provisioned just like my QA, staging, and production SQL servers. And when we think about that last problem of the 57-page installation document, I can encapsulate all those steps, all those applications, those scripts inside of a service template, and whenever I click that deploy button, I know that that recipe is being followed every single time the exact same way. So when I deploy a service template into dev, QA, staging, and production, it's being deployed the exact same way every single time.
And so can a template also help out with self-service as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I want people, again, to have this self-service ability to provision workloads that they need to do their job or that they need to meet the deadlines of a particular project. And by giving them the standard set of templates that I've defined as an IT admin, as this is what IIS looks like in my environment, this is what a file server looks like in my environment, this is what a SQL server looks like in my environment, they're able to just choose from a catalog of service templates that are available, click deploy, maybe provide a few specialization answers to tailor that workload to the requirements of their particular project or the environment into which they're deploying. But I know that that template, and again, instances of that template are being deployed the exact same way every single time, and my users don't have to tell me, well, I need IIS configured, I need this. They just go and choose from a standard selection of templates, they click deploy, and that workload's going to be provisioned.
And those end users are going to be happy as well, because every single time they get that service, it's deployed the exact same way, it's always configured
the
same way.
That's exactly right.
So better for IT, better for our end users
as well. Absolutely. It's not that IT has to go and install IIS every time, and if they install it a little bit differently by accident one time, then it's a back and forth between the self-service user who requested the workload and the IT admin who's responsible for the workload. This way, again, when I know that that template works right, I publish it, and my self-service users can go ahead and click deploy, and they know that they're going to get the right workload configured the right way every single time.
Now, these templates, they've been around since RTM of System Center 2012.
That's right.
We just come out with, coming out soon is Service Pack 1. Tell us, what's new? What's changed in Service Pack 1?
Sure. So to be clear, we did just announce CTP 2 of System Center 2012, which includes updates to most, if not all, of the components. And all of the services and application deployment features that are coming online for SP1 will be coming online with the beta release of SP1. So in CTP2, service and application deployment features will be there at an RTM level, but none of the new features that are related to services will be there. That will all be coming online with beta, which will ship sometime the second half of this calendar year.
So they shouldn't expect to see them yet if they download the CTP, but very soon when they get the beta, they'll get all of these features. So
absolutely.
What are these features?
So in VMM 2012, clearly we introduced this concept of services. And we had a few I'll say, requirements around services that appear to be a little too stringent, right? A little too restrictive for folks. So the first one of those is when you were deploying service instance VMs with RTM, we needed a two-way trust between the VM guest OS and the VMM server. And that winds up being very limiting for people because maybe my dev environment is actually a separate AD forest, or maybe my QA environment is a separate AD forest, or maybe I deploy all of my DMZ machines into work groups, right, which clearly cannot have two-way trust with an Active Directory domain. So in VMM 2012 SP1, what we have done is remove that restriction. So with SP1, you'll be able to deploy service instance VMs to untrusted domains, one-way trust, DMZs, or even work groups should you choose to do so. The second big requirement we had around services was when you're deploying things inside the guest, things like application packages or payload for arbitrary scripts and the like, we require that that VM had network connectivity to VMM library servers who had those packages. And that was because we always did these bits transfers from within the guest to get those packages down and inject them into the guest. Now in SP1, that what we call network transfer, that option will still be available for you. But with the advent of Windows Server network virtualization, what we decided to do was say, well, can we offer a solution to folks who are deploying using Windows network virtualization where those machines may be on an isolated network that doesn't actually have access to either the VMM server or VMM library servers? So for Hyper-V and for Hyper-V only, we will support in SP1 this notion of disconnected VMs where you can still get application packages and payload into the guest. And we'll do that via attaching ISOs. So VMM server will be responsible for generating the ISO, and it will be responsible for attaching the ISO. And again, this is only going to work for Hyper-V-based services. For VMware and Citrix Zen-based services, you'll still use network-based transfer for those. So that will continue to work, but for that disconnected scenario, we're going to account for that for Hyper-V host in SP1. Another one of the big features that we have is, in VMM 2012 RTM, we had this notion of what we call an application host. And we had one type of application host, and it was called a SQL application host. And I'll explain where this idea came from. When we started bouncing these service ideas off of customers back in the planning phases of VMM, we had great feedback that, yep, this is exactly what I'm looking for. But one of the pieces of feedback that we got was, well, you guys have this ability to complete an install of SQL and deploy database objects to that completed install of SQL. That's great, especially for my dev environments. But when it comes to deploying applications into staging and especially production, guess what? Not every one of my services, not every one of my applications gets its own dedicated SQL server, right? More than likely, I have a large SQL cluster that hosts hundreds of databases for tens, if not hundreds, of applications. Mm-hmm. So in VMM 2012, we had this application host concept for SQL app hosts, and that allows you to create a service that's going to deploy databases and execute T-SQL scripts against an arbitrary SQL server in the environment, whether it's physical, virtual, managed by VMM or not. So that was great for databases. What we heard from customers after VMM 2012 was released was, you know, that's awesome, and I use that, and I'm going to use that. What about my IIS applications? Because very similar to my database apps, I generally don't give each application its own IIS server. Rather, I have some shared farm that has 4, 10, 20 web servers in it, and that's where my shared IIS applications get deployed. So in SP1, we've introduced support for a new type of app host called a web application host that'll let you take Microsoft Web Deploy packages and deploy them to existing IIS servers in the environment. Again, physical, virtual, farm-based, standalone. What else did we do? So the scripts that I mentioned earlier, where you can execute arbitrary scripts inside the guest. We allow you to do these at multiple points in the service model, so before any application is installed, or after all applications have installed, or before or after a specific application is installed. But we only allowed you to do one script of each type. So if you had to execute, say, 4 different configuration scripts inside of your VM, we required that you created, as an IT pro, one master script, if you will, that called the other 4. But then you really lost the ability to take advantage of this granular exit code behavior and reboot behavior that we gave you on a per script basis. So in SP1, what we've done is allow you to execute multiple pre and post install scripts. So instead of writing that one master script, I could go ahead and add 4, 5, 10 pre-install scripts, give them a deployment order, and specify the reboot and exit code behavior for each of those individually.
Very nice.
Those are the main features that we've introduced in SP1.
Well, there's a lot coming, and I mean, this service model, the service template model is great. I've played around with it a lot. It's great to really, you know, set up any type of complicated environment. You're going to redeploy again and again.
Sure.
And again. But I've heard some customers say, isn't this confusing? Isn't this complicated? I mean, can you show us actually how easy it really is to use one of these service templates?
Let's go ahead and jump into a demo. And what I was planning on doing was showing you a couple service templates, which I'm still planning on doing. But just to alleviate any concerns as to the complexity of a service template, why don't we just create one from the ground up real quick? So I'm in my VMM library, and this is a 2012 system, clearly. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to start by creating a normal VM template. Right? And I'll point out the differences between a normal VM template and one that you might use in a service as we're going through this. So the VM template wizard looks really just like it has in VMM 2008 R2 with a few notable exceptions. So I'm going to go ahead and choose an existing VHD that I have in my library. And it's just a base Windows Server 2008 R2 SP1 VHD. I click Next. I'm going to give my template a name, and I'm going to call this My IIS Server. I'm going to go ahead and click Next. I'm just going to accept the default hardware config, and I'm actually, just for the sake of expediency, going to accept the default OS config as well. However, I will take the OS config section to point out one thing. I'm going to specify an admin password, because I always need one of those during provisioning. And then I'm going to show you that we have these roles and features that can be configured as part of a service. So I can configure these in a VM template. Now, if I go to deploy a standalone VM from this template, I'm going to get a warning that says, hey, you have some features in there that aren't supported for standalone virtual machines. You need to deploy it as part of a service. Now, my standard IIS server, I'm going to make it really simple, and I'm just going to say that it gets the web server parentheses IIS role and all the prerequisite roles and the default roles and features that come with that. And for features, I'll say that all my web servers get .NET Framework 3.5.1. I'm going to go ahead and make this one domain joined. And I'll select a run as account to go ahead and join the domain so that I don't have to actually know the credentials. I can just leverage some credentials that have been given to me. And I'm not going to configure any applications as part of this VM template because this is just for a standard IIS server. I'm not going to configure SQL because, again, this is for a standard IIS server. And I've made a VM template, right? So every IT pro that's familiar with VMM, even 2008 R2, is familiar with what I just went through with the addition of roles and features.
And it's still wizard-based. You know, even if you haven't used it before, it's relatively simple
that's
to
right.
kind of progress through the steps.
Absolutely. So now, how can I make sure that I deploy that as part of a service template so that I get those roles and features enabled, or if I had added a script or an application to make sure that those get installed? Well, we have a new service designer, so I come into the library again, choose Create Service Template, and we ship with a bunch of predefined patterns, like for a single machine or a two-tier app. I'm going to start with a blank one, just to show how easy it is. And I'm going to call this My IIS Server Service, and I'll give it a release, which is like a version. I'll say this is version 1.0. And I start with this blank canvas, right? So here's my service. Now you'll notice on the left, all my existing VM templates show up. So all I have to do is take that VM template that I had just created, or if I had an existing one, that's fine too, drag it into the service designer, save it, and I'm done. That's it.
Pretty straightforward.
I have a service template, and if I deployed this, I'd get all those roles and features that I just enabled provisioned as part of that VM being provisioned. So that's how easy it is to take all of your existing VM templates or to create a brand new service template. And get it up and running for folks. If I didn't have existing VM templates that matched what I wanted, I can go through the Add Machine Tier wizard here, and all that does is literally launch the VM template wizard. And I walk through the exact same set of steps that I just did, and I'd have my service template ready to go. So I could take this service template, publish it to my end users, and now I know that they can deploy an IIS server with the roles and features that I want, and perhaps a script that I want executed for all of those. Now I'll jump over to a different one. Almost every company, every customer has web applications. And as we spoke about a few minutes ago, lots of times they're being deployed to a shared web farm. So I went ahead and created my own service template that I called Web Farm. And I configured it to use the Web Farm framework, which is something that ships for free and you can install it. And what it does is configure a web farm for synchronization. And it has this notion of a primary node, which accepts applications, and a bunch of secondary nodes, which receive those applications. So I created a two-tier service, again, no applications. And what I did was, I said that when my primary tier is going to be configured, what I wanted to do is not only enable a set of roles and features that I need for all of my IIS farms, and again, those are defined right here, so you can see there's a number of them that I've enabled, and a couple features, but I've also taken advantage of that scripting capability and that payload delivery capability to say, I want to execute this script. And all this script is a CMD file, and that CMD file is in this resource package in the VMM library. And if I open that resource package up, you see there's a bunch of files that are actually inside of here. So we're going to inject all this payload inside the VM, and we're going to execute the script that I told it to execute. And if I look at that script, what it's going to do is a number of things. And again, with SP1, I could split this out into 10 different scripts if I wanted to. I have it all in one script still, but it installs the web deploy framework, and it configures the firewall by calling this VB script. It sets some registry entries for the remote management service, make sure that service is started, and then it goes and uses the web farm framework PowerShell layer to go ahead and create that web farm. And then I also have a secondary tier in that service, and what that tier does is, for every machine that comes up in the secondary tier, it just joins itself to the existing farm that the primary tier created. And you can see my secondary tier has been marked as a scale-out tier. So I've said, maybe I deploy with only two servers in that farm, but I can easily use the scale-out wizard in VMM or call our PowerShell layer via something like Operations Manager or Orchestrator in response to load on that farm and automatically scale out that secondary tier, bring new servers into the farm, and have them receive all the applications, add them to the load balancer, and I could really have automated scale-out by using this model.
Wow, this really does speed up deployment time then.
Absolutely. And if I look inside my VMs and services view, you can see that I actually have a web farm deployed from that template, web farm version 1.0, and it has a primary tier and a secondary tier, and it has one instance, one VM inside of each of those tiers. The next one I'll show you is a standard SQL server. So I have this standard SQL server template here, and if I open it in the designer, again, it's simple. It's a single tier. It's a single VM, right? I'm just deploying a single SQL server. And if I look inside of this template, my SQL servers actually don't require any pre-existing roles and features. So in the OS config, there's no roles and features selected. However, my SQL server config tab is all filled out. So what I've said is, I want an instance of SQL server. I want that instance to be called MS SQL server. I want it to install underneath this account. And I'm able to specify a bunch of great configuration, like who are the initial SQL admins, and is the SQL server in Windows mode or mixed mode? Do I want TCP/IP enabled? And if I have some options that I want set for SQL Server during install that we haven't exposed, I can attach my own custom SQL Server configuration INI, and we'll go ahead and merge those settings at deployment time and get that SQL Server provision just the way you want it. Finally, I'll show you one more service template. Actually, I'll show you two more. So one I have is for a standard wiki application in my environment. And what I've done is created a two-tier application, one that installs SQL Server and installs a wiki database. And if I look at that tier and go into the app config section, what you'll see is that I'm not only installing this wiki DACPAC, this database, I'm also executing a T-SQL script against it to go ahead and pre-populate it with some data, create some SQL users, all per my specifications. And I've installed a wiki application, the web front end. So I have a web server and a SQL server in this service, and it's going to get deployed, and it's going to wire itself up. The connection string is going to be configured right. It's going to come up at the same time, and I can manage that as a unit. I can stop it, start it, update it as a unit, or even delete it. Maybe it's only for dev purposes, and when I'm done, I delete the service, and I'm confident that all the VMs that are part of that service are going to get deleted as well.
Whatever's in that self-contained unit. We deploy it together, we delete it together.
That's right. We start it, we stop it, we pause it, we delete it all together. So that's great. Maybe that's good for a dev environment. But again, in production, I probably want to deploy these things to shared infrastructure that's already been provisioned. A shared SQL cluster, maybe a shared web farm that's out there in the environment. So this same service template I've rewritten as one that I call Wiki Application Host, because it's taking advantage only of application hosts. And in this case, what you'll notice in the designer is I still have two tiers, but there's actually no VMs being provisioned. I'm installing that same DACPAC to an existing SQL server, that same website to an existing IIS server. So I can leverage the same application artifacts that I get from my developer. He's tested them perhaps on that service template that I just showed you that provisions VMs, because he's doing isolated development work. And once that's done, he or she goes ahead and gives me those application packages. I put them into a template to deploy to shared infrastructure. I specify at deployment time the SQL server I want the database on, the web server and the website that I want the IIS application on. I click deploy, and because we're not provisioning any VMs, that deployment usually takes for me about 30 seconds, and boom, I have a fully functioning distributed service up and running in my environment on shared infrastructure that's already been provisioned.
Well, great concepts of private cloud. You know, you showed standardization, we've showed how that's led to self-service, and, you know, I guess really we're eliminating kind of this repetitive task so that we're freeing up time from these IT pros. Instead of redeploying the same thing again and again and again, maybe misconfiguring a step, you know, we can guarantee the same results every time, make it much quicker so that our IT pros can spend more time working on new projects,
exactly
not
right.
just redeploying the same service again and again.
And if you think about IT pros as being responsible in many cases for, again, that shared infrastructure, right? IIS servers, web servers, file servers, Active Directory servers, even in the IIS and SQL case, right? They may be responsible for spinning up an IIS server and turning it over to an application development team or turning it over to another ops team that has responsibility for the applications that are going to go inside those VMs. Again, you could model at least the shared infrastructure portion as a service template and then allow your ops teams to use self-service, allow your app development teams to use self-service to spin up the VMs that they need so that you're not responsible anymore for installing IIS manually or even logging in and executing a script. So if you've automated it already, great. You should take that automation, put it inside the service template so that you don't even have to manually log in and execute the script. You give the template out, you publish the template out, and you still are confident that those things are being provisioned the exact same way every single time. And then your application owners, your ops teams, your application operations teams, they can take your existing templates that you've published, if you give them the rights, copy them so that they're still using that base IIS configuration and add their own applications, add their own scripts into their copy of the service template so that they can then use it to deploy their fully functioning application, their distributed service, into any environment that they need to deploy to.
Very nice. Well, I see a lot of great benefits, and I'm sure most of our audience out there will be using these, but where can they go to learn more?
So one of the best places really is if you just Bing VMM blog, you're going to get to our central SC VMM blog. There are a number of blog posts already on services that are out there. We have a new series that's going to be coming out as well over the next few weeks, really starting from the ground up with services, with I want to deploy an IIS server, I want to deploy a SQL server. The great thing is service templates and VM templates are fully exportable and importable between VMM systems. So we're also thinking of starting to provide some pre-canned content, right, where someone could just download the template itself, import it into their VMM system, do a couple minor fix-ups like point us to the right VHD in your environment, point us to the right set of credentials in your environment, and you're up and running without even opening up the service designer in some cases by just importing that template and making a couple modifications and clicking deploy, and you're up and running. So definitely Bing VMM blogs, number of posts there already.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your time. That was a great demo, great overview, and stay tuned for some more System Center 2012 and private cloud content in about 3 to 4 weeks when I'm next back. Thanks a lot, Stephen.
Thank you.
Well, we're back. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Stephen, and I hope you enjoy the Edge show this week. And you're going to get to see some more of Rick next week, who's going to be the host. So do you know what you're covering?
I think I'm on par for next week. And so I'm going to be talking about, I found a couple of product team people I want to come in and talk about something called PowerShell Workflow. So not just doing PowerShell scripting, but actually have some pretty rich workflow with some error trapping and some retry intervals that used to take an awful lot of extra scripting and effort to be able to do, now simplify with PowerShell V3. So I'm going to see what I can do to get those guys online and see where we go from there.
Sounds good.
So don't forget to email us at edge@microsoft.com. Also, you can tweet us at TNEdge anytime if you have any sort of questions or comments, some topics you might want to see. And other than that, I'm going to say, see you next week.
Thanks.